is Ed Asner, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Today, we take you to the steps of the new East Patrol Station, where One Struggle KC and Moore Squared held a rally to show that they do not approve of the 47 killings over the past 10 years by the KCMO Police Department. Then, host Nancy Leeser talks with Laura McDonald of Moore Squared about the situation. After the break, host Dr. Jay Renee talks with Brian Goins of the Center for Conflict Resolution about neighborhood accountability boards and the principles of restorative justice they employ. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Up next, our recording of the KCPD 47 rally, followed by Nancy Leeser and Laura McDonald.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming out today. My name is Britt, and I'm with One Struggle KC. This is a joint solidarity action called KCPD 47. You all are here today because we are doing the solidarity action One Struggle KC and Moore Squared. Again, we want to welcome you all for being here today. We know it's cold. If you did not sign in, the table is over there with Austin with the gray hat. Austin is waving his hand. Please sign in. We have pledge cards for Ryan Stokes. Please make sure that you do that as well. We do have a short program, and after the program, then we will have some chanting, so that will help warm you up. Again, welcome. Thank you all for stepping out in the cold. This is a very, very important message, and we are glad to see your faces. So we are going to start with Rabbi Alpert with Moore Squared, and I will let him introduce and say a little bit about Moore Squared.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Rabbi Doug Alpert. I'm with Congregation Kol Ami, the Urban Synagogue in Kansas City. I'm also chair of the Criminal Justice Task Force for Moore Squared, the Metropolitan Organization for Racial and Economic Equity. And I, along with the others gathered here, felt great pain when we read the article in the Kansas City Star about police-involved shootings in Kansas City. And while we, on some level, knew the problem existed, what we didn't know that is out of all cities of similar size that we were the third worst in the country for police-involved shootings. And for me, as a lifelong Kansas City resident, it was a sad exclamation point on what I had witnessed throughout my lifetime, which is the racial injustice that has plagued our city for oh these many years. And in talking to police officers, to retired police officers in particular, the culture's changed. Where it used to be that the training for officers was designed to diffuse tension, it now seems to be create more tension and to ratchet up the tension. We need to find ways toward a nonviolent resolution of encounters between police and citizens whenever it's possible, and to foster meaningful and positive relationships with the communities that they serve, and in particular, the black community. Because black lives really do matter. Ryan Stokes' lives mattered and matters. In the book of Deuteronomy, in our sacred text, it talks about Tzedek, Tzedek Tirdof, pursuing absolute justice. And while scripture recognized the need for police and magistrates and specifically prescribed it for any community that could function, that should function properly, that those who are in charge of administering justice for our community had to pursue the highest standards of justice. And that is what we need to do for our own community. And that's ultimately what we seek here today, a more racially just Kansas City, and one in which we can create an environment of justice and not fear, where those, our courageous police officers, are imbued with the responsibility to treat our citizens, and particularly our black citizens, not from a standpoint of fear, but of a standpoint of trust, a standpoint of mutual respect. It is what we can do as a city, the city I love and known all my life. It's what we must do as the city that I know and must and have loved all my life. And I stand here in solidarity with all these people and many more, the entire African-American community, to say it's time for a change, it's time for accountability, it's time for a new community where there is trust and not fear. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ashley, and I'm an organizer with One Struggle KC. One Struggle KC is a coalition of community members that was started in 2014 to harness the energy of Ferguson and to connect the struggles of oppressed communities. We know that racial profiling and excessive policing happens in Kansas City, just as it does in Ferguson, in Baltimore, in Chicago, in Minneapolis, and in every other community where there are police in the United States. We cannot and will not be apathetic to the oppression of black and brown communities. One Struggle Kansas City stands with those across the country who are fighting this oppression and will continue to root out the perpetrators of this tyranny right here in Kansas City. We are here to remind KCPD that their behavior is unacceptable. The governing body of the Kansas City Police Department doesn't think that Kansas City needs any oversight in their policing tactics. They think that the 40 officers who murdered 47 people that have faced zero consequences, zero indictments, zero criminal charges, and zero accountability is okay. Kansas City has had a high number of non-fatal police shootings, larger than our neighboring cities. 56 people have been shot by KCPD and survived. And in a city that is nearly 33% black, 60% of those 47 killed were black. Kansas City has been identified as one of 14 cities where 100% of those killed by police in 2015 were black.
Wow.
We know that the police cannot police themselves. There is currently no independent monitor of police shootings in Kansas City. The only body that is held responsible for complaints against the police has investigated zero officer-involved shootings in all of the 45 years that it's been functioning. We know that increasing police budgets allows for the over-militarization of police. Police across the country have used chemical weapons against the citizens they are supposed to be serving and protecting. Resources should be allocated to build communities, not to occupy and destroy them. We know that the grand jury process is corrupt and unjust. There is a less than 2% chance of officers being indicted for killing citizens. Grand juries, especially in Kansas City, are sabotaged from the beginning with policing simulations and overexposure to police. Jackson County Prosecutor Jean Peters Baker is not even required to send police-involved shooting cases to the grand jury. Grand juries do not promote transparency and are an unfair representation of an already misaligned justice system. That is why we are here today. That is why we must take action.
Yes.
Now we are going to read off the 47 individuals who have been killed by KC police in the last 10 years. Juan J. Juarez, 20 years old, Hispanic man. Edward D. Washington, 24-year-old black man. Chet A. Vermillion, a 26-year-old white man. Lamont Livingston, a 20-year-old black man. Anthony A. Champion, an 18-year-old black man. Leland J. Graham, a 21-year-old black man. Linda Joyce Friday, a 55-year-old black woman. David W. Lodston, a 51-year-old white man. Cheryl L. Creason, a 57-year-old white woman. Wade Bentley, a 29-year-old black man. DeAndre T. Clay, a 21-year-old black man. Morris Butler, a 31-year-old black man. Robert L. Wilson, a 56-year-old black man. Terry Davis, a 26-year-old black man. Rodney A. Jones, a 44-year-old white man. Reginald McGee, a 55-year-old black man, Marvin E. Parker, a 54-year-old black man, Ryan R. Spears, a 22-year-old black man, Dennis Watson, a 55-year-old black man, Fritz M. Leandre, a 19-year-old black man, Alphon Gant, a 26-year-old black man, Exe Chavez Gutierrez, a 36-year-old Hispanic man, Anthony D. Clements, an 18-year-old black man.
Blake Bowman, 18-year-old black man, Jessica T. Jones, a 19-year-old white woman, Maher El Hakim, a 29-year-old black man, Kenny Wayne Gurley, a 40-year-old white man, Marcus A. Robinson, a 27-year-old black man, Rodney A. Russell Jr., a 29-year-old black man, Jessica Zito, a 34-year-old white woman, Courtney Edwards, a 27-year-old black man, Jerry Petty, a 64-year-old black man, Raymond A. Smith, a 22-year-old black man, Danielle Walsh, a 58-year-old white man, Todd S. Weber, a 38-year-old white man, Waylon J. Wheelett, a 21-year-old white man, Tyler W. Wilkins, a 16-year-old white man, Ryan Stokes, a 24-year-old black man, Michael R. Bitters, a 24-year-old white man, Anthony Bruno, a 26-year-old white man, Isaac Sims, a 26-year-old white man, Eugene Turner III, 28-year-old black man, Yamaha Irwin, a 28-year-old Micronesian man, Shannon P. Bryant, a 40-year-old white man, Andre Lara Rodriguez, a 20-year-old Hispanic man, Javon M. Hawkins, a 21-year-old black man, Tyrone Holman, a 37-year-old black man.
Let us please take a moment of silence for all 47 victims of state violence. Thank you all. All right, so you heard the names. 47 people have been killed by KCPD. How many more will we tolerate?
Nine.
I said, how many more will we tolerate?
Nine.
That's what I'm talking about. So now we're gonna let KCPD know that we will not tolerate anymore. And we've got a few chants to help warm you up and also to let them know that we will not tolerate state violence by the Kansas City Police Department. No justice?
No peace.
No justice?
No peace.
No justice?
No peace.
No justice?
No peace.
Hands up.
Don't shoot.
Hands up.
Don't shoot.
Hands up.
Don't shoot.
Hands up.
Don't shoot.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter. Ryan Stokes means
we have to fight back.
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 Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks
like. Hey, hey, ho, ho, police brutality has to go.
Hey, hey, hey,
ho, ho, police brutality has to go.
Hey, hey,
ho, ho, police brutality has to go. Same story every time.
Being black is not a crime.
Same story every time.
Being black is not a crime.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
Okay, KCPD, what do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
Jane Pierberger, what do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
So I'm going to close out with this final chant.
And I want you guys to repeat after me and remember this as you move on today and as you go through 2016, because 2016 will be different than the past. It will be different than 2015 and 2014. We won't have any more names, and it is our duty to make sure that we don't. So please repeat after me. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love and support each other.
We must love and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
One more time. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love and support each other.
We must love and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Thank you for coming out tonight. Thank you, and continue your hard work in 2016, because we will let them know that we will not tolerate this anymore.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Leeser, and my guests today are Laura McDonald, the Executive Director of More Squared, and Justice, the Education Chair of One Struggle KC. Thank you both for coming this morning. On January 3rd, the Kansas City Star published an article about the Kansas City Police Department killing 47 people since 2005. This was the third highest per capita rate of comparable cities. Before we discuss this article, would you each tell us just a little bit about your organizations? Laura, do you want to tell us about More Squared?
Sure. Thanks for having us, Nancy, on this Martin Luther King holiday day. More Squared, Metro Organization for Racial and Economic Equity, is an 11-year-old faith-based organization operating in Kansas City. We work in both states, Kansas and Missouri, toward justice issues, and we're a part of a larger network called the Gamaliel Network that's based in Chicago, where we're working together nationwide with our other 60 affiliates toward dismantling structural racism.
And Justice, would you please tell us a little bit about One Struggle KC?
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. One Struggle KC is a coalition of community activists that came together after Mike Brown's murder in Ferguson, Missouri. And so some of the co-organizers went to Ferguson and helped on the ground there. But there were people who realized we have a lot of those same issues here in Kansas City, even though we have a black mayor and a black police chief. So we came together right here in our hometown to work on issues of state violence.
Thank you. Justice, would you tell us what your reaction was when you read that article?
Well, I was really floored by the information that came out in the article. This is information that we have been trying to get our hands on for a long time now, and I was very happy that the Star put the work in and the effort to bring this information to us. I was happy about them bringing it out, but I was very upset upon hearing about the number of people who have been killed and the callousness at which the Kansas City Police Department acts when people are trying to find out what is happening with these murders.
And Laura, would you please tell us what your reaction was when you read the article?
Well, so I was interviewed for the article, and I had some tip-off then that there was going to be an article, so I knew some of the information in it. I think what alarmed me most when I read it was the quotes from the Board of Police Commissioner and Chief Forte that seemed to be suggesting that the community doesn't care. They know about the existence of One Struggle KC. They know that More Squared has been coming to meet with them. The community does care, and they know it, and to be so casual and flippant about it was really startling to me.
Yeah. Would you tell us a little bit about your meetings with the Kansas City Police Department?
I don't think there's a whole lot to say. I mean, for us, it was raising questions. We had a group of clergy, three clergy, go meet with Chief Forte just a few months ago. We've had ongoing contact with a deputy chief who's trying to organize a response, I suppose. in the community. So they're actually, you know, using their own paid staff time to work on these issues, but they're suggesting that the community hasn't raised any questions about the issues. So we just wanted to expose that truth, for one, that the community's here. And 100 people strong came out in six degree weather to say, hey, we care about this. With really only 24 hours notice, people came out. 100 people came out in cold weather to say, we actually have a serious problem with this. So there's not a lot to say about the details of the meetings at this point. We just simply have been calling questions at this point.
All right. And Justice, you said that you were concerned about the callousness of the response of the police department. Would you explain what you meant by that specifically?
Well, when you act as if there is not a problem, and we have been coming to you and asking you, what about this? What about Javon Hawkins? What about Tyrone Holman? What about Ryan Stokes? And you come and say, act like we, like Laura mentioned, like we didn't care, or like we haven't been asking these questions. It's like a slap in the face, for especially for activists who come together and work on this all the time, and who reach out and ask Forte those questions. You know, some of our members have been blocked for asking Forte questions about these murders. So he has not been open about them. As a matter of fact, he's been very blunt about not talking about them, and going as far as to say, put in a sunshine request if you want to know something. So he's not open to giving us that information.
So I thought, isn't the police department supposed to conduct open investigations of each police-involved killing?
Well, that's what we thought. I don't know what the Kansas City Police Department is doing. Obviously, a lot of what they want and not enough of what the community needs.
So what is your response going to be to this going forward?
From I think, our point of view, we are not locking hands with the police, you know, and singing kumbaya and praying this issue away. That's not going to happen. We're going to basically stand our ground on what we believe in. We believe in community policing. We believe that the community should have the power when it comes to policing, and not the other way around.
Laura, what is your response and Moore Squared's response going to be?
So personally, I would just echo what Justice just said. It's about community getting involved. And the honestly, police are supposed to work for us. But we see two systems of policing, for the black community versus the white community in Kansas City. That is nothing new. That's where the roots of policing come from. And we see that, you know, the police work for people who look like me, for anybody who doesn't know I'm Caucasian, and that the police work actively against people of color. I've seen it firsthand, Nancy. So we've got to change the two systems of policing first and foremost. The community has to engage around that. I realize that that sounds really inflammatory, but the reality is that's what people live with every day in this community. There's two different realities. If you're a victim and you look like me, you're treated one way. If you're a victim of color, you're treated a different way. That's at the very roots of the problem. On top of that, you're profiled in a different way in the community if you're a person of color. So the solutions are going to be multifaceted. We did not get here overnight, and we're not going to get out of this with one, pardon the pun, one single bullet. Right? It's going to take multiple solutions. We know that the police should not be investigating alone. They can do whatever they do at internal affairs. But ultimately, if there's been 47 homicides and not one of them has resulted in a prosecution, we've got to question whether that's okay. We know for a fact that there's 7 officers on staff right now at KCPD who have killed 2 people apiece. I have a lot of questions about that. That was in the article. We have a lot of questions about that. Were they thoroughly investigated by the people who they work with every day? I just can't accept that as a fact, that they've been thoroughly vetted and that all of those were what they call good shootings. And we have a criminal justice system in the nation, and actually everyone deserves a trial. Even if any of those people did something wrong, they absolutely deserve a trial. I don't think white people would stand for those kind of numbers of us being killed.
And Justice, Laura spoke about the dual system of policing in this community.
Right.
I assume you agree with that. Would you like to talk about that a little bit from your perspective?
Sure. Well, from my perspective, the police have never been for us, for my community. If we really want to go back, policing out of the slave patrols, right, going to catch runaway slaves to bring their property back to said masters. And this is the same structure. This is the same power. This is the same force that we're living with. Images have changed over time, and they have now accepted some of our own, but our own are just following along that playbook. And when I say our own, I mean black people, black officers are following along the same playbook as white officers, and they are a part of oppressing their own people. But it's systematic. It's through a system. So absolutely, yes, the beginnings for us has been this way.
And what do you think needs to happen within the police department to change that?
I'm pretty radical on that. Number one, for me I would say disarm the police. And I know that that is a radical stance, but that's the one that I'm good on. I'm good with taking personally, because they are killing us. They are killing us. So I would disarm the police. I would definitely get rid of the Office of Community Complaints that is doing absolutely zero for the citizens of Kansas City, Missouri. There should never, ever be a police person involved with an organization that is supposed to be about the community. So we don't have anything to address these issues, and that's one thing we need to set up. I would do those two things.
Ask this question of each of you. What specifically would you to replace the Office of Community Complaints?
It should be something that's truly reflective of the community. It should be from the community, by the community, for the community. It should not have it should not be tainted with this police influence that it has right now.
I think a lot of people, Nancy, don't even know that when you go and file a complaint at the Office of Citizen Complaints, that is going to be investigated by a police officer. It's not going to be investigated by a member of the community. I, for years, actually worked for a certain retired police chief in Kansas City, and I had no idea that that was the process. I was sending people there not knowing that their complaints would be unfounded. And I hear complaints from people, and none of the complaints that I know of that people have filed personally from personal friends and contacts in the community, none of them have ever had been substantiated. So that's a problem. That's a problem. I know a young woman who was held at the ground by 8 police officers in a case of mistaken identity at gunpoint just a few months ago, and it was unsubstantiated. She was on her way home from volunteering at Ronald McDonald House. They hadn't even asked for her name or ID, and she was on the ground. And I'm like, go file a complaint. And it's unsubstantiated. She shouldn't have been treated that way. She shouldn't have been treated that way. She's thinking of relocating from our town because of this. A good corporate employee who's volunteering in our community is going to leave because of what happened to her here. So that the overhaul of the Office of Citizen Complaints and having actual citizens hear those complaints, another change that needs to be made in that process is the citizen review board or whoever it might be that replaces it should be able to initiate a complaint. If I don't personally go down there and complain about what happened to me, nobody can look at it. Nobody initiates a process here. Then there's also laws around prosecution that need to change in the state. Prosecutors aren't actually able to convict a police officer who fires and kills somebody at the same level that they could convict me. If an officer feels afraid, even if their fear is rooted in racism, they are protected by our law in Missouri. So that needs to change. The grand jury process needs to change. There's so many things, Nancy, that need to change here. But basically, we need engagement from citizens who are hearing what I'm saying, who are hearing what Justice is saying today, to come out and get involved with us.
And I was just going to ask you, how could citizens get involved with each of your organizations if they feel compelled to do so?
So probably the easiest way to find us is just to go on Facebook and More 2, because you can't use an exponent on there. More, M-O-R-E, the number 2. You can find us on Facebook, and I'll reach out to you that way, or you can find me that way.
And Justice?
Well, we have monthly meetings every month, the last Tuesday of the month, and we will have one January the 26th at Trinity Church at 620 Armour Boulevard. Also, you can find us at Facebook, One Struggle KC, at riseup.com, and www.onestrugglekcwordpress.com. Also, we have a Twitter handle.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, the calendar for January 18th, 2016. Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty encourages you to attend an historic public hearing for Senate Bill 816, which would repeal Missouri's death penalty. The hearing will be held in Senate Committee Hearing Room 1 on the first floor of the State Capitol in Jefferson City at 3 p.m. Tuesday, January 19th. The bill is sponsored by Senator Paul Weiland and will be heard before the General Laws and Pension Committee. You are invited to join Communities Creating Opportunities Sisterhood Academy to learn how to tell your life story powerfully and be inspired by stories of other sisters. The guest speaker this month is Kimiko Gilmore, Kansas City Assistant City Manager. January's meeting will be 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the KCMO Health Department, 2400 Troost Avenue, KCMO, in the lower level multipurpose room and auditorium. For more information on this and future gatherings, as well as registering to attend, call CCO at 816-221-9900 or check out their website at www.cco.org. The NAACP, Kansas City, Missouri branch, and the Missouri Sierra Club will hold their next general membership meetings together on Tuesday, January 19th at 6 p.m. for a celebration of environmental justice at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center, 4750 Troost Avenue, KCMO. Kendra Glover from the NAACP will speak on the Cold-Blooded Report, and local panelists will follow up with comments and questions about environmental justice in Kansas City. Come out and learn how you can make a difference in this area. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org, and also Jaws of Justice Radio on Facebook. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Next week on Jaws of Justice Radio, Keith Brown L. talks with Caroline McGinnis, author of Banknotes, The True Story of the Boonie Hat Bandit, a hard-hitting look inside Missouri's criminal justice and prison systems. Now, Dr. J. Renee and her guest, Brian Goins.
Hello, my name is Dr. J. Renee, and I am here at the Jaws of Justice Show with Mr. Brian Goins, Sr., a local youth pastor who is actively involved in his community, to talk about the work he is doing with the Center for Conflict Resolution, and more specifically, the Neighborhood Accountability Boards. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Welcome you to the show, and thank you for coming out. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me out.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about the Center for Conflict Resolution?
Yeah, the Center for Conflict Resolution actually works in the community. We do mediations, we work in the schools, and we do neighborhood accountability boards. It's actually located 1734 East 63rd Street. You can call in if you're having any type of problems, like landlord-tenant type situations or some problems with the neighbors. You can call in and we'll come in and we'll actually help you out. We also do a lot of training around restorative justice practices.
Can you tell our listeners, give them a brief description of what we mean when we talk about restorative justice?
Yeah, sure. What you have with restorative justice, you have punitive justice. Like, let's say you do something, you take something from the store, you get arrested, you go to court, they give you a sentence, you have to follow that out. That's what we call punitive justice. Restorative justice brings you in, sort of talk to you, try to figure out what's going on that has you going down this path of breaking laws or doing things that are not acceptable. And then we, as a group, with the community, with you there as the offender, with the victim there, we all together try to figure out something that not only helps you from not doing it again, but hooks you into resources so that you can change your life.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things proponents of restorative justice think about when we think about restorative justice, or RJ, we think about bringing together the victim, the offender, mm-hmm. and the community in an effort to resolve the harm
right.
associated with the crime that was committed. Can you tell us more specifically about the work that's being done at the center related to the neighborhood accountability boards?
Okay. What the neighborhood accountability boards is, the Jackson County prosecutor has decided to work with the Center for Conflict Resolution. So what she does is, when she gets certain cases, she refers them to the Center for Conflict Resolution. At that time, we have a process that we go through, that we sort of talk to the victim, talk to the offender, and everybody has to agree to want to do the neighborhood accountability boards. Then once we set them up, you get someone like myself, you get different people from the community who have been trained to do neighborhood accountability boards, and you set a date, and you bring in the offender, you bring in the victim, and we sit around at a table, and we go in and we have the neighborhood accountability boards, where you have the victim, the offender, people from CCR, and you have people from the community, and we just figure it out.
And what are usually the goals of those meetings?
The goals are always to, whenever there's a fence done in the community, there's a break in the relationship. Like your relationship to the community, your relationship to that victim, there's always a break. So the goal is really to restore those relationships. And instead of ostracizing someone who did something wrong, we want to give them a pathway to fix what they've done. You know, obviously you can't always fix what you've done, but you can make different paths into reinjecting yourself into the community.
Can you tell us how you became personally involved?
Yeah, actually, you know, I go to Christian Fellowship Baptist Church on 45th and Truce. We got an email, and it's sort of funny. We got an email about some restorative justice. My wife is all about criminal justice, so we had no idea what it was. But she was like, let's go, let's sign up, let's go to a training. And what they did is, I guess they sent out a community blast, and it was a lot of us from the community. And we went in and we had this training with them for 2 days, and it was talking about neighborhood accountability boards and different things. And we were sort of like, yeah, you know, we learned it. It was really good information. You know, we got really good books and really good training. It was like, yeah, this sounds pretty interesting. And so, like I said, she was really into it. And at the beginning, I was like, yeah, whatever. But then we start doing them, and what happened is, like, since they wanted to do them in the community where a lot of the offenses were, or where the Jackson County was giving us, so we wind up start doing most of them at our church, and we just were there for basically all of them. So we could do, they generally were taking maybe about an hour, so like we would set up three in one day, and we would just do them, and as we were doing them, as we were connecting with different people in the community and getting them into different resources, it was like, man, this is amazing. So we've just stuck with it. That's been about, I want to say, 2 to 3 years ago, and we just continue to do it now.
Restorative justice, when you see it happen, it is amazing, isn't it?
It is transformative. I'm a Christian, so it just sort of links into what I believe, where you know, instead of the overall just punishing somebody, if there's a way to restore somebody, mm-hmm. if there's a way to get somebody to come back in the community and be productive versus, I mean, me and you both know people that went to prison and it's just sort of like, okay, you get out after your 8 years and sometimes you're a better criminal and there's really nothing. So really, if we can sort of work with people to say, okay, we understand this behavior you have. Is there a way for us to help you change that behavior versus let's lock you up and punish you? So it's really good. It's amazing. It's a way of lifestyle to me, actually. Me and my wife have, you know, really adopted the practice, even with discipline our own kids.
Yeah, I think I became a peacemaker, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, and you can't help it. It does overtake you. I think one of the things, and you were talking about victims, offenders, and community. Mm-hmm. And offenders, we really do want to help them transform, right?
Right, right.
'Cause that's the only way you're really going to see change. Victims, on the other hand, get something from restorative justice that they don't get right. from the traditional criminal justice system. And a lot of that has to do with healing
right.
and restoration. And then the community. I think all members, victims, offenders, and community learn accountability.
They do. They do. And I would say this about the victims. Part of the process is the victim has to be willing to participate. The offender has to admit that they did the wrong. So we don't re-victimize the victims. In sitting in these rooms and sitting with victims, I've sat down and you see the people that were victims come in very apprehensive and very against the process. But I can honestly say we've always left that room and they were like blown away. And they really, a lot of the victims were like, man, I really want to participate. Because one of the things we don't look at when we send people to court, you got the judge speaking, the lawyer speaking, maybe you get some testimonial. But often the person that's been victimized doesn't get to say, hey, this is what you did to me. A lot of times when offenders really hear, like, you know, when you did this, now I don't trust anybody in this and that, you know, it's heavy on them versus, okay, you go do 60 days and you get out and it's like, okay. But when you have to sit across from somebody and honestly just admit what you've done and for them to honestly tell you, look, because of this, you know, I don't go to the store anymore. And because of this and that, that's really life changing. And really in those rooms, everybody sort of comes out different. And it's an amazing thing.
I'm a member of the larger national restorative justice community. Mm-hmm. And so we don't sit in the same rooms, mm-hmm. but it's amazing that we all come out with the same stories. Mm-hmm. One question I want to ask you about the different cases. What is the most interesting case you've seen come through our Kansas City Neighborhood Accountability Boards?
Wow, we've had some interesting ones and not to... So, there's a confidentiality sort of attached.
Well, no names.
Well, no names or anything like that. I would say the most interesting cases are always those with two parties. It's always when you have two people with two different perspectives of what happened.
Yeah.
And then when you sit them down and they sort of start talking, you know, even just through their storytelling, which is part of the process, and then just getting that understanding. There's some other interesting ones. Wow. I've had people that had situations with police where people were like, well, I don't understand. And then to have a police officer sit there and sort of explain, those are always really eye-opening and good for people to understand.
Is there any case that stands out to you as maybe one of the hardest cases you've had to deal with?
Yeah, one of the most difficult cases, it was a young person who was stealing food. But they were just hungry. At the end of school, that was the end of their food. So they would literally get off the bus and go steal food. And it was just heart-wrenching to see these young people that don't have any guidance, don't have anybody that's sort of leading them the right way or sort of taking care of them. So they're trying to take care of themselves by any means necessary. And so it really tugged at us real tough. And I think that's another one of the reasons that I really enjoy the work, because when we're able to say there's a food pantry here and there's this there and there's, you know, or mentor someone and give them some resources and put them in a place, that's amazing.
Are there any other interesting cases? Give our listeners a good story.
Actually, there was a case and it really left us all speechless. There was an employee who stole from his employer. So the owner came in And as we talked in different things, because, you know, of course, the guy got fired. At the end of it, the owner decided that once the employee, former employee, completed everything we asked for him to do, that he would give him his job back and allow him to pay him back through his checks.
I think, and I've seen that happen before, where you start out and you have victims on one side and offenders on other. But before it's over, they've come together and they decide to work together to resolve the harm. My name is Dr. J. Renee. I'm here with the Jaws of Justice Show and Brian Goins Sr., a local community pastor from the Center for Conflict Resolution, and we're talking about the Neighborhood Accountability Boards in Kansas City today. Can you tell us how many cases are coming through the Neighborhood Accountability Boards?
Weekly, we're generally doing 2 to 3 cases, but it is always dependent on what the prosecutor is sending to us. So, like, right now, we're not getting a whole lot of cases, but when we pick up, it's like 3 cases a week at least.
We've talked about how great these neighborhood accountability boards are.
Right.
And one of the great things that I like is that we're actually getting the community involved in these. Can you tell our listeners, those who maybe have interest has been piqued today, how they could become involved with the Center for Conflict Resolution?
Okay, the Center for Conflict Resolution, our actual offices are 1734 East 63rd Street. We're generally, somebody's generally there Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturday. Our phone number is 816-461-8255. All you do is you call down, you say, hey, I heard something about neighborhood accountability boards. I want to get involved. And from there, we do several trainings. We do different, like, observations. So you may be able to come in and do an observation, or somebody would talk to you. So you got Debbie, we got Marsha, we got Annette sort of answering the phones, Greg down there. And sometimes you get a volunteer, and we'll just sort of talk to you and say, hey, come on in, come on by. You can always stop by the office when we're there. We're on the third floor. And you may walk in, and you're probably walking in on a training or anything, and we'll get you some information and get you started.
Can you tell us about some of the different trainings that are available?
The different trainings, you have restorative justice practice, you have circle practices, you have interpersonal relationship, dealing with conflict, dealing with trauma. Yeah, you got a lot of mediation.
Okay, great. So there are a lot of avenues for the community to get involved. And I do encourage people to take an interest in restorative justice and find out more about it. What about for those people who have had something happen? Maybe the neighborhood kid stole my peacemaking sign out of my yard, and I want to deal with it.
Right.
Can we call you guys?
Yes, absolutely. We love those type of cases. You call in and we'll see what we can do for you. If you got willing parties on both sides, yeah, we'll set it up and we'll mediate and we'll do whatever we need to do. Yes, that's more of what we would like to see, because what happens is, you know, we have this call the police, call the police, call the police. So, yeah, that's exactly what we like to see.
Are you guys doing any work currently in the schools?
Yes, right now. Actually, this last semester, we were in Central High School, Central Middle School, Northeast Middle School, Southwest High School. And we did a 6-week deal at Faxon Elementary. And coming forth in January, we're still in Northeast Middle School. We're looking to go into some other schools. I won't, you know, name, because we haven't button all that down. But we go into the schools. We actually teach courses on sort of conflict resolution and interpersonal skills for the students. It was really good this last semester. We actually spent the whole semester with all the freshmen at Central High School. So it was really interesting. We took over a class one day a week, and it was really good. So that's like over 170 plus students.
I'm really proud of Kansas City and the work we are doing in restorative justice. Can you once again give our listeners the contact information?
Our contact information is the Center for Conflict Resolution, 1734 East 63rd Street, Suite 305. The phone number is 461-8255, and you can get us online at ccrkc.org.
Thank you so much for coming out and talking to us. Brian, I really appreciate it. Thank you for letting us know what's going on at the Center for Conflict Resolution. and describing the neighborhood accountability boards, as well as it's interesting to hear what's going on at the high schools. I'll have to have you back so we can talk more about that. And everybody have a great day.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following was taken from the most recent Cultural Baggage program. It features Mr. George Martorano, a gentleman who was sentenced to life without parole for his third marijuana possession charge. George is now out after serving more than 32 years. George, this is this is an example of just overreach, over incarceration. And I guess it brings to mind, you know, you mentioned the conspiracy. I want to share with you a quick story. The first day I met Jack Cole, who was then the first director of law enforcement against prohibition, he told me a story of how they would bust in. They would find minor amounts of harder drugs, cocaine, heroin, or whatever, and they would throw it in a big bag of sugar so that they suddenly had pounds of these harder drugs, even though the percentage was less than 1%. It's just a classic example of overreach, all these conspiracy-type charges, correct?
Yes, I mean, look. I had no record. I didn't have a traffic ticket, but I was a criminal for 3 years. I'm no angel. I was a criminal for 3 years, okay? But the probation department on the old law, I was on the old law, had a serious job, and their job was to read your indictment, okay, scrutinize every bit of your criminality, create a PSI and a recommendation to the judge. And as the leader, managerial role, I was recommended 48 to 52 months, okay? And the judge, they actually recommended less than that, and the judge called the private hearing with the probation department and screamed at him. He says, you have to do more. I think it was like 30 months. And they redid the whole thing and came back and calculated 48 to 52 months. So where was life no parole came in? Well, it was all political. Again, you know, you can point the finger here and you can point the finger there, but Philadelphia had a lot of problems with street violence with the Italian element, okay? It had things to do with my father, but not me. There's no violence in my case at all. So there was no arrest. I imagine the powers that be in government were screaming, what's going on, and then here comes me, a knucklehead. I fall on the marijuana case, and that's when they started to use me, put the screws to me. So basically, it was a political situation, ladies and gentlemen.
Once again, that was Mr. George Martorano, who spent more than 32 years behind bars for marijuana. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce Jaws of Justice Radio, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live and find podcasts of our show on the KKFI website, that is kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Beth Pike, for her work today. My name is Melvin Merritt, asking you to tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Claymer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.